I'm Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Marketing Trends and the Leeds Art Week.
Toby Gabriner is a multi-time CEO and a veteran in the worlds of marketing, advertising, and growth. Today, he is the CEO of Nextroll, where he and his team are building platforms that are changing the lives of marketers everywhere. Using new technology like AI and machine learning, Nextroll is bringing more precision and unity to the entire marketing experience. Toby discusses that and more on this episode of Marketing Trends. Marketing Trends Podcast is brought to you by Salesforce. We bring marketing and engagement together. Learn more at salesforce.com/marketing.
Here is your host, Ian Faison.
Welcome to Marketing Trends. I'm Ian Faison, host of Marketing Trends. And today we are joined by special guest, Toby. What's going on?
How are you, Ian? Great to be here.
Great to have you on the show. We have talked about AdRoll probably about 120 episodes ago at this point. So it is fun to have you in talking about all things Nextroll, including obviously AdRoll as part of that. So we're going to get into that. We're going to get into your background. But first, how did you get started in marketing?
By accident, Ian. I came out of school at the height of the dot-com craziness in the late 90s. And was looking for an early stage company to get involved with. I got a dual degree MBA, MSMIS. So I was interested in the connectivity between business and tech, and got connected into a really early stage company that was doing some pretty amazing sort of advertising technology, more on the creative side. And which is a long winded way I sort of fell into it by accident. I started with that company, and eventually we were able to build that company up and was acquired by one of the large advertising holding companies, and spent some time there. And then over the years, continued to be involved in the marketing technology landscape. So it wasn't by design, but I've spent over 20 years now running a number of companies in the sector, and I think I've kind of gotten pretty knowledgeable about it over the years.
Yeah, it was funny as we looked at, you know, going through your background for the prep of the episode, what an interesting kind of like weaving in and out of this industry that has changed so much over the past decade. And it kind of seems like the right place for you is Nextroll. Can you share a little bit more why you were so excited to join the team?
Yeah, I most definitely. And you're exactly right. I've seen quite a bit of the evolution of the sector. And one of the reasons why I've continued to stay in the sector for so long is the fact that it has continued to change and evolve and some pretty seismic, exciting changes along the way. When I first started, automated or RTB type advertising didn't exist. A lot of the kind of marketing platforms that we see today, in terms of what they can do with data and insights, didn't really exist. So there's just been a myriad and ongoing fluidity of changes that certainly kept me excited to remain in the loop. As far as it comes to what was then called AdRoll, so I had actually known the founders basically since inception and really followed their trajectory over the years and always been extremely impressed. And after my last company, Adapt TV, was acquired by AOL, I spent about a year and a half at AOL and then made the decision that it was time for me to move on and sort of figure out my next adventure. I spent about a year and a half, 2 years, doing some consulting, investing, sitting on boards. And my predecessor, Aaron Bell, tapped me on the shoulder at AdRoll and said, hey, I'm potentially considering moving on at some point. Would love to sort of handpick my successor. Would you have any interest in learning more about the company And so I came in as an advisor, and it was the best job interview you can imagine. I spent 9 months as an advisor. They got to know me. I got to know the company. Long story short, I became super excited about both the number of customers. So the company was working with over 30,000 customers on a global basis. It was a truly scaled platform, had developed an incredible set of underlying technology and data collection, machine learning, performance, and had was really working towards attribution and some other key areas. And long story short, I just saw the company had already been very successful in one area, which is retargeting, but was starting to really think of itself as more than just a performance advertising operation, but really a marketing platform for thousands and thousands of companies, tens of thousands of companies. And that was just a really exciting opportunity for me. And that's what led me to jump in.
And so I don't know what numbers you can share here, but what is kind of like the general scope of the organization at this point?
Well, we're about 700 people globally. We are doing well north of $150 million in revenue. We are profitable. We're entering into our fourth year of profitability. I think probably what's even more exciting is that we now have three specific business units focused on direct to consumer. So really building out a deep marketing platform for direct to consumer brands. And about a year and a half ago, we launched, actually moving up to almost 2 years ago, we launched Rollworks, which is focused on B2B marketers. So we have an account-based platform. And all of that is built off of the same underlying technology, which is all open API, which led us to have a third business unit, our Nextroll Platform Services, where we have companies that are now building on top of our APIs and able to offer either expanding on their platforms or offer their customers certain capabilities, marketing and advertising capabilities that they don't currently have. So so those are kind of the top level. We also have an exciting joint venture with Rakuten in Japan. So our Japanese office is now rolled into that joint venture. So a lot of great momentum, a lot of great things have happened over the last several years.
Can you touch on a little bit this change from, you know, AdRoll to being Nextroll that you rolled out at the end of last year? What's kind of the impetus for this, for the change? Obviously, you know, you mentioned a little bit that AdRoll was kind of like one thing to one group of people and you wanted to expand that, but it seems like the offering that you have now, like you mentioned, you're targeting different types of CMOs, different types of marketing leaders and developers and all sorts of folks who want kind of that cohesive approach.
Yeah. So just taking a step back, you know, as I alluded to, the company when I entered in a little over 3 years ago had a larger vision that had been evolving to becoming more than a performance advertising point solution, that we really saw marketing and advertising technology starting to collide together. We had our customer base that was increasingly overwhelmed with all the different platforms and systems that they were using. They were struggling with unifying their data, unifying their channels, unifying their measurement. So we saw a really significant opportunity to start to really expand the capabilities on our platform. And we've been hard at work at that. And I'll talk more about that later in the show. The other critical piece was is that, you know, we had organically really grown about a quarter of our revenue. We had originally started out as a focus on direct to consumer, but had organically grown our revenue into the B2B sector. And as I was saying, we had about a quarter of our revenue coming from that customer segment. And what we were finding is that a one size fits all platform really didn't work, that we had customers that while we were selling into marketing organizations, their needs were really starting to become divergent. And while we could use the same kind of underlying base core technology and capabilities, or core platform, if you will. But it was really critical for us to start to go deeper and provide more specific capabilities to our direct-to-consumer customer base and to our B2B customer base. And that's what led us to launch a specific operating or business unit called Rollworks that is 100% standalone, has its own P&L, own product design and engineering, sales organization, et cetera, focus on the B2B marketers. So, you know, you now had a situation where the Adroll brand really didn't apply to who we were as a company any longer. And paralleling that, as I said before, we were having an increasing number of companies that were starting to just leverage our APIs and build their own capabilities off of our core base platform. So we've been on this evolution. We launched Rollworks, as I said, almost 2 years ago. And, in late last year, we felt like it was really time for us to start to have a new brand in market that allowed us to tell kind of the bigger story about the company, both in terms of the platform capabilities, as well as the fact that we had different brands in market ultimately. So that's what led to us to launch the NextRoll brand.
Yeah, and I love that. I mean, it's one of the things that, you know, on this show, we have all sorts of different guests from B2B to D2C to many other acronyms in between that probably all rhyme. But it is like this clear delineation where you have kind of like the base level skills for a marketer, and then you have all of these other, you know, being customer centric and things like that, understanding your customer journey, all of those kind of like building blocks. But the actual skills required to build a marketing team for these type of companies is so different. And the amount of complexity between the platforms and channels and everything truly builds in complexity every single year, to the point where it kind of seems like there's just so many options. It makes sense to me why you would kind of split those two things. And I'm curious, we'll start with D2C. What were some of the insights that you have been seeing from like what D2C marketers, like how are they different? How are the things that they require, unique and differentiated?
Yeah, it's a really great question, Ian. And I think you're spot on that the needs and the componentry that's required starts to become fairly divergent when you go deeper into direct to consumer and B2B. Let me start with, though, there are some real similarities, and it's one of the reasons why we're super excited about our model, which is that, as I said before, the one aspect, or I should say the three aspects of that are similar across both direct to consumer and B2B marketers, is this need to unify data, unify channels, and then unify measurement. But when you start to then unpack within each of those areas is where it does become very different and not even just nuanced, but very different. So the types of data that need to be unified, the different systems that data is coming from. So for instance, in B2B, there's a big usage of like CRM systems and marketing automation systems, things of that nature, where those types of systems tend to be very different in a direct-to-consumer type environment. So whereas in direct-to-consumer, you have like e-commerce platforms kind of other different systems that you need to tie together. So that's one there. Then as you move into areas like the different channels they operate in, and then in the measurement. So for channels, like events, for instance, is really big for B2B marketers, not as big for direct to consumer, right? The conversion paths tend to be a lot more complicated and lengthy for B2B and figuring out, if you touch someone at an event and they saw an ad and you sent them an email and a direct mail drop and things like that, that may be a 3 or 4 month cycle before you actually close the deal in B2B, Whereas in direct to consumer, you know, there tends to be less consideration, faster purchase cycles, things of that nature. So all of those things require different operating systems on some level. So again, being able to use the same kind of base underlying capabilities, but how those capabilities are manifested start to become quite divergent on a go-forward basis. And that was something that we really recognized. And if you were to go into the Rollworks platform and the Admiral platform, they would feel very different to you in terms of a lot of the capabilities. However, if you took a bigger step back, you would say, wow, well, they actually are kind of doing the same thing for the marketer, but just in a very vertical focus or segment focus, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Ultimately, you know, it's like the classic. Yeah, I think people are talking about more now, you know, the B to H sort of thing, right? It's like, it's always a human at the end of the transaction. It's just like, you know, a bigger price or a different sort of thing. You know, your stakeholders might be your family or your friends or whatever versus your colleagues or finance or IT or whatever. I think that is ultimately true, that you have to get to the root understanding of why people are buying your service or what they're looking for, rather than, you know, kind of just shoving features at them, which is probably what all marketers are looking for. But at the same time, you know, part of this is that, you know, reach is a commodity now. Like it's really, really expensive, but it is a commodity. We more or less know we can reach everybody in some way. It's just really expensive. Whereas, you know, 20 years ago, that wasn't the case. I'm curious, like, how does that kind of frame your thinking about like the next phase for CMOs and marketing leaders, knowing that the price in which you reach people is now more of the metric that you need to optimize towards versus figuring out the right channel to maybe reach the right person, if that makes sense.
It absolutely does. I mean, this is why the rise of machine learning is so critical. And I'll give you a great stat, which is like, and I don't have in front of me exactly the study that this came from, but the study looked at the ROI of personalization. What it found was is that for every dollar invested in personalization, you got a 20x return on that. And so it speaks to the importance of being precise in how you allocate your dollars. And if you think about it in B2B, it is particularly when you have like long sales cycles and while they have different types of companies who are part of your target account list, you know, where they are in their buying cycle is pretty critical. I mean, you don't want to allocate a lot of dollars towards personas within a target account that may be 6 months away from actually ready to buy, right? You may say, well, I need to allocate, you know, a certain percentage just to make sure that we remain on their radar. And as they get closer to the buying cycle, that we are part of the consideration set. Whereas if you know a company is really close to ready to make a purchase, well, then you want to be more heavied up with your allocation and your dollars, right? Because you're likely to get a higher ROI. So the usage of data and machine learning is now become so important within a marketer's tool bag or arsenal, if you will. And that's an area that as a company, we've been hyper-focused on. So if you think about, you know, pretty much those capabilities kind of underlie our entire platforms or our two platforms that we offer ultimately. So you're exactly right. We live in an age now where it's not just about reach, it's about precision.
I love that 20x stat. We'll have to try to find it and run it.
Yeah, down. I'll as a follow up, Ian, I'll send that over to you.
It's like one of those things, of course, right? Like, I think that's a lesson that we've kind of been talking about on Marketing Trends for a long time, is like niche down into your audience, into your segments, into those sort of things and help your customers differentiate themselves as much as possible. Do you think that there are things that you're seeing, best practices in personalization right now, that are kind of at the cutting edge? And you, and maybe this is a good time to talk AI and machine learning and expand on that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is an area that, as I alluded to, that I think is really become a cornerstone for good marketing. And by the way, that doesn't preclude or diminish the importance of smart creative, right? I mean, you have to break through the clutter. You have to, and it really is a combination. But and I hate to be cliche, but figuring out you know, the right time to show the right message it really does work. And we've seen that time and time again. It's sort of the underpinnings of our entire philosophy of being as a company. I think that machine learning and AI are now starting to permeate into lots of different aspects of the marketing stack. I mean, we use it from everything to figure out and be predictive on segmentation at the front end. So as we learn more about how certain activities are impacting conversion or sales or important engagement signals, we're able to then have the ability to make smart segments on the front end. All the way through, if you think about, you know, like not only understanding high value customers or but also customers that are getting ready to churn, or customers that you can upsell at a certain time, or the types of products that you should upsell, right? So there's just kind of a stage setting of understanding customer segmentation. Then there's machine learning applied to figuring out the right timing and the right channel and environment and budgets that should be used within different channels. Machine learning is applied. And then on the finally, on all the way on the measurement side, it's machine learning is really important to sort of data driven models to understanding attribution and things like that. So machine learning now really is, I think, for smart marketers, they think about how to leverage it across the entire customer journey, you know, from first touch all the way through to attribution.
Well, one of the things that we found for this show and our other shows is that when you're pushing towards like value add or whatever you want to call it, just content that is helpful and relevant, it's a much easier road to hoe than just like pushing products and features. Obviously, this is, we're talking like B2B on this sort, on this side. You know, if you're talking about D2C stuff, if you're selling belts, like a little bit, you know, harder to create content about, like, you know, the benefits of keeping your pants up or something. But on the B2B side, like, we see these sort of things that are much more beneficial pushing towards content than just pushing like ads, because most CIOs or CFOs or whatever are not going to buy a, you know, $100 million over a 10-year, you know, investment technology product and implementation based off of just, you know, seeing ads circulated to them. So like, how do you kind of view that sophisticated buyer that has, you know, a ton of different data points and things that they need in their process, and how to surround that person with the type of things that they need to make a buying decision?
I think that's exactly right. I mean, our view of it is that it's an and strategy. And one of the things that our system is able to do is to really understand the efficacy of the different ways in which that you're touching the prospective customer. So in B2B, it's as I was talking about before, also it's understanding where the prospect is in their buying journey, who the decision makers are, what are the sort of key signals that you're getting about where they are in terms of their buying cycle. And, you know, our view of our platform is it's all about bringing sales and marketing together, right? Because if you're just running a marketing campaign against a set of target accounts, that is different than what your sales organization is doing, that may be different than what your event organization, like that coordination is super critical. And so the whole point of an account-based platform is to have that sort of singular view of how all those are working together, and then send those signals back out to the various organizations so that they can have a coordinated effort. So it may be that ads aren't having the impact that events and white papers are, or that, hey, you have a prospect that is clearly gearing up to make a decision, and we do want to make sure that we stay front and center. So running some ad campaign is really helpful, and running ad campaigns where you're able to deliver specific kinds of messaging relative to what you think is going to resonate with the prospect, right? This is where that personalization piece comes in. So it's being really sophisticated, Ian, and that's with the beauty of account-based platforms is that, and the Rollworks platform in particular is that we're really able to deliver on that in a meaningful way.
I want to go into the Wayback Machine a little bit, because I think it kind of shapes how we look at, marketing today to look at some of the things that you were working on earlier in your career. And I'm curious, so when you were making, X Plus One or Adapt TV or whichever, it seemed like you were really focused on kind of that like 0-to-1 sort of solution where you have people that need to reach a market or, the combining of resources or the combining of channels, the combining of distribution to make it really easy for a marketer to reach their target audience versus now where there are so many different channels and different sort of things. I would just be curious, in those early companies, what were those conversations like with marketers when you were kind of sharing these new things? It's funny because Lauren Vaccarello, she was formerly at AdRoll and obviously is a co-host of Marketing Trends when she's not surfing. We used to talk about AdRoll stuff, back and how, part of the reason why she was so excited to join is like the impact that she could have with marketers was like huge in those early days because there just wasn't as much stuff out there. I'm just curious, like how did the mindset change or what was it like back then?
Going back to why I continue to be excited, I loved what technology could do, and have always been fascinated with the notion of disruption. And so while I'm not always in other industries, I'm certainly a student of watching disruption in other industries. The thing that we were doing back at X Plus One and then carrying into Adapt TV, the focus was, so there were two underlying areas that I think were massively disrupted. One was the notion of starting down the path, and I think we're way more advanced today than we were then, in getting to this notion of one-to-one marketing, right? That was huge. Moving from, doing these major blasts out and hoping that you're hitting some segment of the population that you think would buy your product to being much more precision oriented. So that was one element. And I think we've made a lot more advancements in the last, 5 to 7 years. The other was automation. And that was the part that in the early days was probably the most exciting was that you had a 100-year-old industry that was, hyper-focused on continuing to use fax machines and paper and handshakes to operate. And all of a sudden, you could have computers talking to each other and things happening in real time. And it's super exciting back in those days. And then with Adapt TV, we were really focused on creating, a marketplace, which was also, a whole newfangled area. Now, all of that with the backdrop of just making precision come to life more. The thing that AdRoll, I appreciate because I have the same feeling that Lauren did about AdRoll. AdRoll not only was focused on those things, but it was also focused on bringing those capabilities to the small and mid-sized companies that Historically had not had access to that kind of technology, because a lot of what we were building in the companies I was at was for like big brands and big agencies. And here Admiral was just saying, hey, we're going to democratize, we're going to level the playing field and enable all these small and mid-sized companies to be able to compete effectively against these companies. And by the way, that is our mission. That is who we are as a company, is to level the playing field on behalf of ambitious D2C and B2B brands. So it's been super exciting. And I would say, you know, today where we are is really continuing to build off of those base frameworks. I think what's also important about kind of where we are today and jumping into the present day machine, if you will, is that the upside was that there was all this innovation that happened over the last 20 years. The downside is like you just have the proliferation of different tools and platforms and point solutions and all of this that now overwhelm marketers, and to the point where it can actually be inefficient in terms of how they have to operate. So what we're actually starting to see is kind of a reaggregation onto singular platforms that bring a lot of these capabilities together. It doesn't mean that they're, only going to be one platform, that these platforms aren't open and other companies kind of build on them. But that's kind of what I would see as like the next wave that's happening now, which is a whole new sort of set of innovations about how do we start to think about all of these different channels in a more holistic way, and they operate in concert with one another, whereas right now they're all sort of operating in silos.
Well, yeah. So, and then the elephant in the room, the two elephants in the room, is that, 80% of advertising goes to Google and Facebook. So if that's the case, and if that's the status quo right now, does that remain the case for a long time? Does that change? How does that change? Because to your point about the D2C brands, part of the thing that was so advantageous for those type of companies with the rise of Facebook and Google was that they could now compete for certain things that they never could have before, because they could, use different keywords or segment in a different way or whatever it was. But then as those grew, larger advertisers come in to the mix, and then it's not quite back to square one. But the other piece with that is it's just easier for marketers, and I'll say the slightly less sophisticated marketers, to just spend more money with Facebook and Google every day, even though that might not be in their best interest. It's just easier. So how do we kind of break the mold of helping marketers spend their money more wisely rather than just what is easier? Because time is money, and if it takes you less time, then that's not necessarily a bad investment.
Yep. So a couple of things on that. One is that exactly your last point. I don't think Facebook and Google are necessarily bad. I think that they can be challenging.
Oh, not at all. They're great.
I just mean, I think that, there's this like us versus them that happens. And, and I'm going to get in a little more detail, like sort of how we think about those. So I think that's one. I think the other, it's not 80%. It's actually 60%. It's 60% of ad dollars. And then if you actually break that digital ad dollars, to be really clear. And then if you break that down a little further, though, Ian, like the Google one is a little misleading, because a lot of companies like us actually buy in the Google exchanges and other environments. So yes, they do get those dollars, but they're getting those dollars through our platform. And quite frankly, we send dollars into the Facebook platform as well. So the stats can be mildly misleading. The other point I think is important is within the digital advertising bucket, 40% of $160 billion TAM is still growing. It's pretty good, because there are just fewer companies now that are playing. And you're seeing companies like The Trade Desk and others that are being successful. From our point of view, though, as we've expanded into other channels. So just so you're also clear, email is a growing and bigger channel for us. We also are starting to connect into other channels like direct mail. And then, you know, a lot of the other walled gardens that are popping up, the Pinterest snaps, Twitters of the world and things like that are becoming really critical. Anyway, so we really are looking at through the lens of like, we're an enabler into different channels ultimately, of which, oh, and by the way, LinkedIn is a big one for B2B. So I think we don't see this as this is sort of like this vortex. And when we think about sort of threats to our business, we actually don't think of Google and Facebook as big threats. They are, to your point, there are certain brands that make sense for them to kind of heavy up. But the companies that we tend to work with are ones that are using kind of multiple channels, are a little, and they're interested in sort of understanding their customers. They're interested in understanding measurement across channels. They're interested in leveraging email. Long winded way of saying we're pretty diversified at this stage of the game. Those two behemoths, while they're certainly large and impactful, they're not the, like I would say for the company, you know, 10 years ago, they were much bigger threats than they are today.
Yeah. And I don't even mean from a, you know, necessarily competitive standpoint. I mean, Marketing Trends as a podcast is agnostic. but what I mean is more about if our goal is to make marketers better, to spend their money more wisely, and to leverage opportunities and be opportunistic, then I think spending more money with Google or Facebook may or may not be the right call. I just mean that like we see the rise of like a lot of MarTech and different sort of things like that. But what Facebook and Google have allowed us to do is, like I said, just be like slightly lazier. Like if they're the casino and there's no clocks on the wall, then, you know, and you're playing $25 limit blackjack. Okay. This is a great example. You're playing $15 limit blackjack, and then they make it up to, now it's up to 20 and now it's up to 25. I could walk across the street where they have $5 blackjack, but I already have my seat and I don't know if there's going to be a seat open over there or whatever, even though it's way more advantageous to go across the street. And kind of my thing is like, if we're trying to be good stewards of like, what can marketers do to optimize their spend and create high yield opportunities, then I think that, you know, leveraging different tools and figuring out what is the right way for your company is really exciting to me. And I like how you're positioning and saying that, you know, being an enabler of finding the right thing is what you all kind of want to do.
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting along those lines, and I agree, I mean, there are absolutely going to be some companies that are lazy. Although I'll tell you, when they stop getting lazy, it's when they see CPMs, you know, on Facebook starting to rise, or they see that they don't control or have relationships with their customers anymore because, you know, those platforms are starting to move into that. And, you know, there's a lot being written and talked about, and we even see customers who sort of have a backlash because they get nervous about, you know, being able to control their destiny on a go-forward basis. Or, as I was saying, you know, Facebook become prohibitively expensive because you've got, you know, if you're in the D2C world, you've got now the big brands who are starting to trying to act like the up and coming brands that are starting to spend into Facebooks, and, you know, so they're driving up prices for the same prospects that you were able to get at half the cost, you know, a year ago kind of thing. So now it's forcing those D2C brands to look at different ways in which that they're operating. So all fascinating stuff, for sure. And we, you know, we've seen where a year and a half, 2 years ago, Facebook was like all the rage for all of our customers. Now they're becoming a lot warier of that.
What's your favorite ad campaign that you've worked on, or one of your favorites in your career?
I wish I had had some time to think that through. You know, I'm not a super creative guy, Ian. I'm a tech guy. it's not to say I don't appreciate. Well,
so many have been on your platform, though. You know, the various platforms that you've created, billions and billions and billions of dollars in revenue.
Here's my easy answer. Here's my easy escape. I love all of our customers the same, so I could never call one out as being better than another.
How about one in the wild that you were jealous of?
I feel like the Rollworks team did a really good job recently, but that would sound too like I'm chest beating.
No, that's okay. You can share that one.
Well, that one was really good. We had a presence and did a sponsorship at a B2B conference a couple of weeks ago. And the team did two things I thought were really cool. One is that they took a risk, and they had this whole concept called Insanity. And the whole idea was that all the B2B marketers kind of do the same thing. And if you're always doing the same thing, you're going to get the same results. And, kind of really pushing the envelope and getting people to say, you know, it's kind of provocative, I guess is a better way to say it. And then all of the aspects around it. So they had like t-shirts that said, you know, this is marketing swag, you know, obligatory marketing swag on that. And they did like air fresheners rather than, you know, kind of pens or something. You know what I mean? They like totally tried to mix it up and had a whole bunch of fun things around that. And they actually used our platform for the entire campaign as well, which it was exciting to see. You know, we're kind of drinking our own champagne. So I thought that was really clever and fun. But as we go through this, I'll try and rattle my brain of other ones that I've seen. It's not that I don't pay attention to them at all, but I guess I have to confess is that I see so many of these that it's always hard to remember one that's like that one really jumped out.
You know, it's always funny because I ask the question a lot, but I never kind of get asked it myself. But I will say one of the ones that I was like thoroughly impressed by recently was The Mandalorian and how well Disney Plus promoted that show. Because it felt like maybe it was just because it was talking to me because I super liked the show. But it just felt like it was everywhere. And it was cool. And it was like ads I actually enjoyed watching.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the sweet spot where you're like, man, if you can follow, like, it's just so hard to get video ads in front of. We should do a whole episode with you in the future just on video because you have so much experience with it. And the entire pivot to video thing, which has had many iterations at this point, but
yeah,
it's just so hard to get videos in front of people that they actually enjoy and aren't bugged by at this point. So maybe that's a whole separate episode.
It's funny. I'm trying to remember The Mandalorian. It was a great show. But I did remember seeing it. I don't remember if they had some clever way they were marketing it or not.
I don't either. That's the funny thing. That's why I felt like I was getting served ads for it like every day. And I don't know if it was just PR or what. And like, that's like one of those, you know, I mean, it pays to be Disney, but I talked about it a little bit on the show in the past, but just like, what a brilliant thing. You're launching this thing, this new service that everyone is clearly going to be interested in if you're in the demographic. And then, oh, by the way, we have this super cool character that we're going to explore in a brand new Star Wars thing. Like, it's just what a 1-2 punch. And you know, they know a few things about marketing, but I always think that stuff like that is really interesting. Cause what would tech company, for example, would do a product launch and like a really cool piece of content launch at the same time. Right.
Right.
You'd be like, why would you do both? But it's interesting.
Yeah.
And I know they're very related, but it is the same sort of thing, right? There's two sides of the same coin there where, you know, you have to split the budget promoting those two things. So anywho.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
All right. Let's get into our lightning round questions. These questions, Toby, they're fast and easy. So nothing like the big whoppers you've been getting so far. Our lightning round is brought to you as always by Salesforce. You can go to salesforce.com/marketing to learn more about the amazing work that they're doing. They bring marketing and engagement together. Check them out. We love Salesforce since the very beginning of Marketing Trends, and you will too. Lightning round questions. Toby, are you ready?
I am ready.
Number one, what app on your phone is the most fun?
It's probably not my most fun per se, but probably one that I do enjoy is ticking off. I use the new Microsoft To-Do. So ticking things off my to-do list, Ian.
That is definitely fun. What is your hidden talent or passion?
Talent, but I'm passionate about health and exercise.
What is your favorite podcast, book, TV show that you've read or listened to or watched recently?
You know, the book that has been really impactful of late is called Stillness is the Key by Ryan Holiday.
I haven't checked. I didn't know that he came out with a new book. That sounds great. What is your favorite thing to cook or eat?
Well, my favorite thing to cook and my favorite thing to eat are two separate things. My favorite thing to cook is I do a very delicious, and I do it almost every morning, an omelet with spinach and other vegetables. But to eat, I would say my wife has recently discovered how to make plant-based hamburger. Sounds bizarre, but we've gone all plant-based. So we've been on this interesting journey around culinary delights that are outside of meat.
What is your best advice for a first-time CEO?
I would say that it is surround yourself with really, really talented people.
What question do you never get asked that you wish you were asked more often?
Well, as a CEO, nobody ever asked me how I'm doing, Ian.
How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, I'll have to make sure that I ask all the CEOs that we have on our various shows how they're doing. That's a great one. That's it. That's all we got. Any final thoughts? Anything to plug? Everybody can just go to nextroll.com, check out all the things that we're talking about. If you're D2C, check out AdRoll. If you're B2B, check out Rollworks and some great content on the site, might I add.
Thank you.
Cool ABM stuff and an ABM guide that people can check out. Lots of fun stuff.
Yeah, we've been pushing hard on providing helpful content for customers and prospects alike. So, or just folks that are interested in learning more about account-based marketing or direct-to-consumer marketing. So yeah, check out adroll.com, rollworks.com, nextroll.com. Ian, thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for joining. Talk soon.
Marketing Trends Podcast is brought to you by Salesforce. Discover marketing built on the world's number one CRM, Salesforce. Put your customer at the center of every interaction. Automate engagement with each customer and build your marketing strategy around the entire customer journey. Salesforce, we bring marketing and engagement together. Learn more at salesforce.com/marketing.